Hey, it's Brent Smith, and welcome to BSL Insider Radio. Today, we're very excited to bring a special guest named Ashley Solomon. Ashley is a writer and therapist who specializes in treating body image issues, trauma, eating disorders, and other types of mental illness. She also has her own blog called Nourishing the Soul, which is a blog about body image. It's also a blog about media literacy and disordered eating. She has a doctoral degree in clinical psychology from Xavier University and has a passion for working with people with serious mental illness, as well as those struggling with issues of body image, low self-esteem, and the effects of eating disorders. Ashley, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. Thanks. I'm great. How are you doing today?
Doing great. We're really excited to have you here, and there's a lot to talk about when it comes to this. And I also have Jason and Troy here with me. Jason, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Yes, I'm really excited. We have so many topics to talk about, so many things relevant for people and information I think they're going to find fascinating today. And thanks again, you know, Ashley, for coming on. First, I'd like to just ask you to give us, you know, a little background on yourself and how you started the blog, because I think that would be pretty fascinating for people to kind of get some background, more background on you.
Sure, thanks. Well, I am, as Brent mentioned, a clinical psychologist. So I've been, you know, working with individuals for several years who, you know, struggle with various concerns from depression and anxiety to eating issues to body image. I work with a lot of women in particular, as you might imagine, with kind of my focus on body image and eating disorders. And a few years ago, a few years ago, I was working on my dissertation research, which is in the field of media literacy and kind of educating people on how to be more critical consumers of the media. And specifically, I was looking at how can we be more critical consumers of the media so as to prevent the negative impacts on our body image. The one thing that I noticed is that there's really, at that time at least, there's really nothing out there about the media, including social media and some of the more like internet technologies and things like that. So I got kind of interested in that and started looking at sort of the negative effects that the internet and social media could have on people's body image and their perceptions of themselves. And I kind of started thinking about, beyond educating people on how to kind of sift through that, is there a place for kind of more positive messages on the internet and ways that we could improve people's body image? And one way that I kind of saw that happening was through really powerful kind of blogs out there that I think kind of painted a new picture for people and showed people either in recovery from bad body image or showed people just how to, you know, kind of be healthy. So I had always really loved writing when I was young. That was, you know, if I hadn't been a psychologist, I wanted to be some famous author. So kind of combined my passions there and decided that I would start my own blog. And it's really kind of evolved into something that I really enjoy doing because it has connected me with a lot of really interesting, neat people and made me feel like I can kind of get a positive message out there to a bigger audience than just kind of working with people individually. So that's kind of the history.
Great. Can you talk a little bit today just to give people some background on kind of what's the state of body image and eating issues today and kind of what are the misconceptions?
Mm-hmm. That's a big question. Sure. So, you know, I think that, you know, eating issues today I think are as prevalent as ever, as they ever have been, and which is really kind of sad and unfortunate given the fact that we've been dedicating more attention and resources to like prevention efforts and things like that. Unfortunately, we really haven't found a lot of things that work really well at preventing eating disorders. And I do think one major aspect of eating disorders is body image. It's certainly not the only thing that drives them, but and body image, you know, also unfortunately is not wholly improved in our society today. I think that we're seeing not necessarily the fact that things have changed so much, with regard, for instance, to like men and boys, but I think it's becoming somewhat more socially acceptable for men and boys to talk about their body concerns. So we're kind of, it's getting a little bit more attention. I think it's certainly always been there. So I think that's a major thing kind of going on. And you know, professionals are really starting to recognize this is an underserved population. This is, you know, a group of people we really need to be paying more attention to.
That's for sure. Well, that's for sure on the men, because I think that, you know, we always think of, you know, the men are always thinking, oh, man, I'm not buff enough, or I don't work out enough, or I don't have six-pack abs or something. But we never really discuss, like, you know, whether a man would have an eating disorder or some kind of, you know, problem there. I mean, no one ever discusses that. So it's good that, that the discussion is, well, becoming more prevalent because you know, obvious for obvious reasons, so people can talk about it, because there may be, it's probably a lot more going on out there than we think.
Yeah, and I think with, you know, sometimes I think people don't necessarily know what to look for in men and boys in terms of, like, signs that there could be a problem, and men don't necessarily know what to look for in themselves. You know, they don't necessarily recognize that their level, like, how often they're thinking about or how much time they're spending at the gym or how much of their mental energy is going to, you know, their eating or whatnot. They don't kind of recognize that as obsessional or necessarily a problem, especially when it's so reinforced. You know, if they, they start to get positive attention for, you know, looking more muscular, you know, we kind of call it in my field, like, the Adonis complex. So, which you might have heard of. So, there, and it doesn't always look like, you know, I think people think of eating disorders as very stereotypically like an emaciated Caucasian teenage girl, and that's really, you know, doesn't encompass the full picture for sure. And for men, it might look like, you know, abusing steroids or not necessarily being thin, but being obsessional about food or, you know, purging what they're eating. So
I think men have somewhat, sometimes have it easier too. I mean, even though, yes, you can look at some magazine covers that have, you know, guys with perfect bodies on them and you know, cover models and stuff like that. But because, you know, especially like men who are more successful, a lot of them, you know, aren't perfect. I think the scrutiny is more on women for sure. Can't leave the men out, but men, I think, because women are more objectified in the media and so on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, kind of walking down a magazine aisle, that's pretty obvious. Just in terms of like the sociocultural piece of that, you know, I think women kind of get it at every turn. So,
well, you know, we were talking about this before is that, you know, right now there's a level of scrutiny on weight for women. Women in the media, famous women, even when they're pregnant, it has gotten just ridiculous what the pressure we're putting on women. And, you know, the interesting thing is, you know, before, you know, we were saying like 15, 20 years ago, you know, as much as people complain, no one was really doing anything about it. They tried having, you know, real at the average woman on a magazine cover, but no one bought the magazine.
Right?
Now, it's, of course, hopefully changing. You know, now, but we were also talking about how, you know, in order for things to change, you know, rather than saying, oh, you know, look, all those women who are airbrushed and so on, just don't buy the magazine, you know, because advertisers and companies will always follow the dollar. They, you know, that's the quickest way to change behavior on it, is to vote with your dollars.
Right. Absolutely. You know, I think that there's a, I mean, so in my, you know, dissertation research, for instance, you know, what I had done was created this program that I delivered to schools. And so it was like teaching adolescents how to be more critical consumers of the media. And that was a big thing that I said, is that, you know, even as teenagers, they have tremendous buying power, and they have such, they might feel like they don't have a voice, but even as teenagers, you know, they're spending a lot of money, and companies and corporate America are going to respond to that in terms of, you know, what they are putting out there. So, you know, I think that can't be underestimated. sort of like the power of the individual and kind of creating change, because you're totally right. Nothing is going to change until, you know, we change our spending habits, really.
Yeah, you're not powerless. And that's what advertisers right. want us to think, is that we're powerless, and because their product will make us powerful. And that's
right.
the whole idea behind it. Give us your money, and this is what happens. I'm not against commerce or anything, everyone out there. I'm just
right,
saying
right.
that understanding how it works is really important for anyone out there, so that you can have the best life you can have. Whether you agree with it or disagree with it, it doesn't matter. Just knowing how it really works, and not how, you know, you've been told that it works, is really,
uh-huh.
really powerful. And it puts you in a position where you can realize that you have a voice. And then you can vote with your dollars. So I really want to, you know, kind of press that home a little bit.
Yeah.
If you're tired of all this stuff, if you're tired of, we have this thing with Abercrombie and Fitch lately, you know, obviously where pretty much everyone has heard about it, where the CEO says, look, if you're overweight, I don't want you in my store. You're not my customer. Period.
Mm-hmm.
Get over it.
Right.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not who we're cultivating. We're cultivating only the cool kids who look like this, who have six-pack abs as guys, and we only hire hot-looking girls in perfect shape for the store, and that's it. And that just
mm-hmm.
deal with it.
And, mm-hmm.
and so that what message that sends, and if you don't agree with that, you know, sending nasty emails to them is not as powerful as just not shopping there.
Right.
Not buying magazines where you say, hey, look at those women being objectified. Great, then don't spend the money. Then, you know, they'll follow the dollars. And so that is your true power, even though it might seem like it takes longer and, oh, I'm only one person. Well, you know, we can start, if you are so inclined, you can start a blog about it. You could organize people. You have the power to form a movement around it as an individual if you choose to believe that. So anyway, I just think
right.
that's really important.
Well, I think, you know, a couple of things about that. You know, I just heard a couple minutes ago, actually, that there's a teenage girl in Chicago who is organizing like a boycott outside their Michigan Avenue store.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, that's a great example of really kind of, you know, putting your voice out there, and that anyone can do something like that. You know, she's, again, utilizing the power of social media to kind of generate this, you know, large-scale effort to say that's, you know, not okay and that's not what we want. I wanted to make another point, though, which is I think it's kind of complicated. I mean, to your point about, you know, a few years ago putting out a more average-sized woman on the cover, no one buys it, you know, I think that we have to kind of really look at our – I think we're often really conflicted about our own feelings about this, and we kind of have to kind of be – truthful and dig deep about our own kind of biases and assumptions, because, you know, my contention is that I think, you know, almost all of us have some like fat bias and prejudice, and I'm not at all justifying what the CEO of Abercrombie did, but, you know, I would say that there are a lot of companies out there that are doing the exact same thing, and, you know, he kind of made it verbal and explicit. But we need to kind of all be looking at what's going on and what our feelings are. And if, you know, Abercrombie's been kind of doing, kind of catering to this sect of society for a long time, and I think a lot of people who now are pretty outraged about what he said probably have been buying the clothes for a long time, knowing that it only went up to size 10 and
yeah.
that there's kind of an exclusionary feeling about the brand. So I think we have to kind of it's a big thing. We need to kind of be looking at ourselves as well.
Yeah, I think that's a great point you just brought up, because I think that everybody does have – you have to look at your underlying thing, because you're so trained to do certain things on autopilot, like, you know,
right.
that's great. That's a good-looking person. Yeah, look the way that fits. I like to be that too. It's aspirational, supposedly, right? Even though if you're
right.
pointed in, so you, but you buy it and you don't even realize that you're doing it. I also think that – you know, there are people, you know, and we have to kind of examine our feelings about, I guess, the average weighted person, or maybe a person who's a little overweight, and our belief that all of them must be unhealthy, and we're just trying to prevent them from, you know, and why should we promote, you know, shouldn't we promote a healthy body image rather than a unhealthy body image when 60% of America is obese? even though it's not their fault and advertisers have tricked them into being addicted and buying what they buy and eating bad food and buying stuff that kills them and makes them sick, at the very least, you know, I think people are on that side too. And they're saying, well, I mean, I'm not going to promote a bad body image. I'm not going to promote people not being healthy. But then it goes too far, which is what you deal with, which is people that are obsessing about not being that. And then they go completely to the other end and, you know, which is, and they're getting some crap for that too. I mean, we're obviously, it's not just, you know, overweight people. It's, you know, constantly in the media, people are saying, well, so-and-so is too thin. Look at this picture of her. She's obviously an anorexic. So it goes the other way too.
Right. There's a kind of, I don't know, to some degree, like this damned if you do, damned if you don't mentality about, you know, you sort of have to, people have to fit into this very narrow range of what's kind of considered, quote unquote, like a healthy or normal weight, or they're going to get scrutiny. And I also think, you know, made me think that, or reminded me to say that, you know, I think that sometimes we really conflate weight with health. And, you know, you kind of pointed that out with not wanting to kind of reinforce, you know, a poor health by, you know, supporting those kinds of things. But I think that that's really kind of a fine line. Like, it's pretty dangerous because what we know is that weight and health actually have pretty low correlation between one another. Some of the healthiest people can be in the obese range, and, you know, BMI is a pretty bad indicator of health, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I think it gets complicated for sure.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's confusing to a lot of people, which is why I'm glad we're talking about it and bringing it out kind of in the open and discussing it and putting it out there for more discussion on it. I think it's I think it's fascinating. Jason, what do you think about all this?
Well, I think it's really interesting that a lot of this goes into reinforcement of, you know, the story that you tell about yourself and the self-talk that goes on all the time. And I think, you know, advertisers and society as a whole keep solidifying that message. So you tell it and you're repeating this in your head over and over again and doing all these things to basically form it as a habit in how you view the world. And the story that you keep telling yourself about this and playing into at that point. And then, you know, you have to change all that in order to change the output and what's going on. And that's really the next thing I wanted to ask you, actually, is really talking about the self-talk and story creation around that and, you know, how people are actually communicating. Because I saw a blog post you did and people talking about old talk or fat talk and how people are connecting through in a negative way versus a positive way. And that really struck out at me because something we always talk about is, you know, the story that people tell about themselves and tell to others is really the foundational piece of what's going on. And unless that's changed and made a real positive way in order to kind of help inspire and give to other people, really everything else kind of goes off the tracks and a lot of negative and things happen and you get in this downward spiral.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, I've always believed this, but I think becoming a therapist and working with, you know, people, you know, person after person, just really solidified for me just how powerful words are. You know, and language is sort of the foundation of our identity. And so, you know, I think that, like you're saying, the stories that we create about ourselves are so powerful. They're not just stories like about ourselves, but the stories create who we are. In my work, I actually run a group based on, you know, a concept called narrative therapy, and the whole premise is trying to kind of rewrite and recreate your stories and through storytelling, because we know that's such like a primitive and powerful way of connecting with other people and ourselves. So I've seen it be, you know, doing things like, I mean, even literally kind of rewriting your story be really powerful for people and kind of changing the way that they're connecting with their body, with food, definitely with relationships. So it can be some pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah, story is one of the main things that we teach around here. Because it is, I like that quote, you know, your story just isn't just about who you are. Your story creates who you are. And that is so true and so powerful.
Yeah.
And I think that if people can connect with their power to create who they are rather than their temptation to continue being the victim and powerless, that anything's possible. Anything's possible. Because your belief is based on your story that you create and where you create who you are, that and your belief is based on that. And of course,
yes,
everything we believe, we operate 24/7 gathering evidence to support that belief, and that's our identity,
right.
And we move forward in life and we show up in life like that.
Right. Yeah, it's really interesting if you can kind of, you know, I've found this in my own life, that, you know, if you sort of find this core belief, if you can kind of dig through, you know, everything and figure out, like, what's the core underlying belief here, and you'll start to notice, you know, in everyday life just how powerfully that shows up for you, and then that kind of gives you, like you're saying, that the power to really kind of adjust that, or at least to look at it. You know, I think that's what I always tell people I work with, that's really the first step is, you know, we're not even going to try to change the story quite yet. We just need to recognize that it exists and how it's kind of operating in your life right now. So.
Yeah. And I think that creation is like one of the biggest things that we ask people to at least accept or take a leap of faith on, because mm-hmm. a lot of times we're asking them to create a story around physical evidence that hasn't shown up yet. And that's a leap for a lot of people. So I think that people have been told that, you know, they're lying to themselves, they're faking it. And of course, lying's bad. Faking it is fake, right? It's not being mm-hmm. who you are. It's being inauthentic. And so we have all these stories around those two concepts as well,
right.
which
uh-huh.
then helps us resist the idea that we're powerful enough to create our life in the moment that we create it, whether it's through thoughts we think or words we speak or even words we write down. Mm-hmm. And if someone can accept that, boy, that's really and in fact, what you just said was also very powerful, is that let's just talk about the fact that how powerful story is to begin with and what you've already created in your current story. You've created that. And, you know,
right.
so part of that is taking responsibility for your creation of it, even though your temptation is to blame others, right? Well, you don't understand my parents, my childhood, this, that, my
right,
boss, all
right.
this kind of stuff, all these outward things, and have someone say, okay, you've got to forgive all those people and let it go and realize that, you know, this story is powerful because you've created it and you live it. You live your story all the time,
right.
at all times.
Right.
So fascinating
right.
conversation. I love this topic.
Yeah. Well, I think, too, you know, one of the things that I often talk to people about again is really trying to figure out, like, within your story, what are your values, what's important to you, and then maybe think of this because you were talking about the fake it till you make it kind of idea or faking it, and I actually think it's kind of a brilliant concept because, and I talk about that a lot, because once we kind of figure out what our values are, even if we don't, like, necessarily believe different things about ourselves quite yet, you know, if we haven't gotten that far, we can still sort of act in accordance with our values. So we talk to people about, you know, when it comes to, like, health, for instance, or body image, you know, you might not feel beautiful, but why don't you work on faking it and go out to that party that you've been avoiding. And, you know, a lot of times our thinking and our story creation is going to kind of be in line with the way that we're living our lives. But we can't kind of keep ourselves holed up and just kind of wait for our minds to change is something that I think is pretty important.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that's important.
Yeah. We always tell people live the life that you know, that's in your new story today.
Yeah.
That'll help solidify it. And then you have to start creating evidence for that new story, even if you don't believe it at that point. So I think it's really critical that people start living a life and doing things as that person would do in your new story and not your old story anymore. And it's just it's a practical way to keep that moving forward and really create change in the moment and start creating that evidence, which will help you make bigger leaps of faith because you're actually seeing that it's possible. And you're giving yourself reasons why it's possible now instead of giving yourself reasons why it's not possible. And that's a huge thing.
Yeah, you can kind of like get that momentum going and change begets change, you know. So once you start to see that, you know, you're living that life.
I think it's helping people realize that, inspiring them to realize that the evidence they're so desperately seeking for to be able to move forward. They can create it. And so it's really just helping them with that realization and that awareness that it is they are the source of that. It's not. It might not come from outside. You've got to start living it right now. You've
right.
got to just, realize how powerful you actually are, which should be exciting to you because you can
right.
create something new.
Yeah, I mean, you had mentioned kind of it, shifting the focus away from kind of blaming things external to you and kind of assuming the responsibility and of making those changes in your life. And I think what's really powerful is that you can, once you recognize that, you can realize that, all right, maybe these outside influences have had an effect on you. I mean, of course they have, but what's your role in being able to impact them and kind of change that
yes.
cycle that might be happening? And I mean, I see that or talk about that a lot in context of relationships in particular. Even like parental relationships, how we all like to blame our parents for various things. And now that I have an 8-week-old son, I've decided that's totally wrong. Parents don't do anything wrong. But
of course.
You'll probably be blamed
anyway, no matter. But
I'm sure he'll be, probably in therapy talking about me one day, and that's okay. But because that, that's the work he's got to do. So I'll do the best
that's
I
right.
can, and he'll do the best he can. So.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, I'd love to ask you a question. So when you see people resisting or not
yeah.
really moving forward, like what are the reasons that you see that's happening? Like what kind of specifically is going on for them not to really kind of be able to move forward and kind of create some positive change and change their thinking?
That's a great question. I think one big thing that I find with people that I work with is that, as I was just saying before, I think it's important to kind of figure out what are your values and then start acting in accordance with them. I think that applies to whatever you're dealing with, whether it's eating issues, body image issues, depression, whatever, even non-mental health things. But I think I find a lot of people kind of start from a place of just not really knowing what's important to them, not really being connected with what their values are at all. Maybe they haven't given it really much time or thought or exploration. So I think that can sometimes account for some stagnation and some resistance to making changes. If you can't connect with why it would be important to kind of make a change, because change is hard, then, why would you do it? So just like a lot of, I end up doing a lot of kind of motivational work, particularly working with people who are trying to change their disordered eating. Especially if, I think in my field in particular, there's a lot of like secondary gains from, for example, like being thin or, conforming to look a certain way, in certain realms of their life, it's being really reinforced. At the same time, sometimes it's hard for them to recognize how all these other things are really failing and they're really struggling in these other ways. So we're just kind of often at the beginning trying to really take a look at that, looking at it kind of broadly and with an open mind. And I think that kind of sets the groundwork for being able to kind of move forward and implement some different things in your life.
Interesting. Yeah. So you're saying that the values, even if someone doesn't know what the values are, which I agree with, a lot of people will come to me and say, I don't know what I want.
Right.
Well, then how can you possibly have it? I'm paralyzed by indecision. Great. Then choose something. Is what I always tell them. Then just choose. Let's prove that the process works instead of sit around for 5 more years. Now, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. I don't know what I don't know what's important to me. Now I'm all confused. Well, pick something that's important to you and let's talk about
right.
it.
Right.
Let's move you towards it as long as it's something healthy, of course, but
right.
let's choose something. And I'm interested to know with people that have who have an eating disorder of some kind, we obviously, stereotypical thing we think they value is whatever they're, getting some too thin, because there's different kind of eating disorders, but obviously,
right.
but we know what they value. It's body image, right? There's some kind of thing they have in their head, a body image that's so strong that even when they look in the mirror, sometimes they don't see what's really happening. So, I'm interested to know when you're working with people like that, what kinds of of things do you find that they, that I guess when you talk to them about, you know, finding what matters to them, what's important to them, mm-hmm. and so on, and, but pushing through all that stuff that they think is important, how you find right. that process. Am I making sense?
Yeah, yeah, totally. You know, I think, well, I think one thing to kind of note is that I think it's been sort of a misconception, you know, a pretty widespread misconception that people with eating disorders, you know, are very focused on their body. I think that's true for in a lot of cases, but in a lot of cases it's not. And actually in our, you know, diagnosis manual that's coming out in a couple weeks, the most updated version, they're kind of taking that criteria even out of eating disorders because it used to very explicitly say, you know, having this concern with body. But what we found over the years is that there can be all kinds of reasons that people have disordered eating. But I think for people that do have this kind of preoccupation with body, you know, that's a lot of the work is figuring out, like, what is it, where has that been often, where has that been learned, like, what's important about that? But there's nothing, I mean, ultimately, you know, this is sort of my bias here, but there's nothing implicitly wonderful about having a certain body type. You know, what it comes down to, I think, is that, you know, it's sort of a means to connection for people. You know, they feel like often, and this is painting with a broad stroke, I guess, but that by being thin or looking a certain way that they will be, you know, ultimately loved, cared for, get recognition, you know, be accepted. And those are all, like, just really, you know, core human values, I think. And once we can kind of figure that out or help a person see that, they're like, what are you really looking for here? Like, well, really, you know, I haven't been felt connected to my partner for the last 5 years and, you know, I'm sort of taking it out of my body, then we can kind of work on that. And sort of the eating, we have to work on it, but it falls into line in a sense. Because there are things that are really core and important to people. And I think they also have to really look at, like, how does their disordered eating, how is it impacting those things that they truly feel when we kind of brush away all the debris that they truly feel are important to them. So if connection with your partner is important to you, like, how is, you know, hiding in your bedroom, eating Oreos, aligning with that, you know, because you're alone and you're keeping secrets and so on and so forth. So,
Wow. Yeah, and we do that in other parts of our lives too. Right?
Yeah, so absolutely.
It's behavior when it's not really getting us any closer to what we say we want.
Right.
You know,
right.
Taking down on ourselves. You know, like, it's going to, like, somehow that's going to be the thing that you know, is the thing that combats all of that anxiety we have.
Right. Yeah, and we get so kind of wrapped into it, and like you said, it could be anything, that, you know, it's hard to sort of see the forest for the trees, I think, at that point. You know, particularly when we're talking about, you know, certain things like eating or substance use or that kind of thing, where it's not only impairing your psychological functioning, but your physiological functioning, how your brain's even working, you know, it's really hard to see that. So sometimes it does take, you know, being a professional or talking to someone else to kind of be able to look at that.
Yeah. Fascinating. We all have a story about it too. So
yeah,
don't we? We all have a story about it, a defensive story or an offensive story or something like that.
Right.
And so
mm-hmm.
story really is connected to this as well, you know, when you're confronted
right.
with it. Well, that's awesome. Cool.
Hey, can you talk about binge disorder? Because I know you mentioned that before the call, and I think that's probably something that'd be interesting, you know, binge eating
sure.
for people.
Yeah, so it's pretty exciting from my perspective, because in a few weeks with this our new manual coming out for diagnosis, binge eating disorder is actually included. And, you know, it's been something we've recognized in our field for a long time that people are struggling with, but in terms of, like, insurance companies and other kinds of like healthcare providers, you know, hasn't really been recognized. So binge eating disorders, what we're going to find in a few weeks is suddenly that this diagnosis is here, that, you know, millions more people are going to fall into the category of having a diagnosable eating disorder because it's much more common than, you know, say the traditional eating disorders of like anorexia or bulimia. And basically it means people are struggling with eating, you know, very large amounts of food in very short amounts of time. You know, often there's a lot of secrecy around it. There's a lot of shame. You know, it's a really major issue. A lot of people that are seeking like weight loss surgeries or even just like weight loss interventions like Weight Watchers or Jenny Craig, et cetera, you know, a huge portion, some people say like 30 to 50% actually would fall into the binge eating disorder category, which means like you really got to look at that, you know, and treat it as an eating disorder before they're going to be able to make any kind of significant changes to their body. They kind of start by looking at their mind and what's going on. So there's kind of a lot on the horizon there. You know, we're developing more treatments. People are kind of more willing to kind of seek out help, which is great. So in my practice, we've seen, you know, a lot more people in the past few years being willing to kind of come forward and talk about this and start treatment.
That's great. It's something that you, that's good because that's obviously what's needed and you would know best. Something that you touched on there was people that go to the diet systems. I don't know why this just stuck out really quick, but so I wanted to comment on it. You can change some of your habits, your daily habits, but if your mind's not in it, right? Mm-hmm. If your mind's not in it, then, you know, because, you know, your mind, you know, most things are like 80% mental. I find whether it's doing the last three reps at the gym, it's not the first 12 that matter, it's the last three. And most of the time, you are capable of more than you believe you're capable of. You just haven't ever been, you know, told how to access it or dug deep enough or you don't know you can or whatever.
Right.
And so I think that's important to note there because it's not just purely, you know, using a technique and getting in there and saying, okay, you're going to eat less and we're going to portion it out and you're going to do this. Yeah, that's
right.
Part of it. Absolutely. But it's the mental is where it's going to screw you up. And I'm going to say something very un-PC right now because I heard it from somewhere else.
That's
and this
okay.
is kind of what made me think of it. But, you know, a friend of mine who deals with a lot of this stuff said, look, you know, if you're talking to someone overweight, and he said, look, it's your emotions that are making you fat.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right, the food is there, but it's your mind that you know that you need to work on too, because you can't just change your eating habits or whatever. You've got to actually, because mentally, if you're not there, you're still doing things for mental reasons, for reasons that you believe are the right reasons or whatever. You are from your perspective, from your current perspective, it seems like the thing to do. So anyway, I just wanted to touch on that because I thought that was interesting.
No, I mean, I think that's a great point. That 80% of things are mental. I would totally agree with that. You know, and I think that people, you know, especially who are, you know, seeking weight loss, what saddens me about it is that they're sort of investing often a lot of time, energy, money, and other resources into these, you know, things that they're hoping will bring this desired outcome without kind of starting, you know, with themselves and recognizing, you know, in the case of people that I work with, that, you know, they often have an illness that they need to address, you know, something's pretty significantly wrong. And I think it just can be really frustrating. And then that cycle happens, of course, of, you know, the diet doesn't work or the weight loss surgery doesn't work. And then they internalize that feeling like, you know, they failed in some way. You know, the system didn't fail them or they hadn't taken the wrong approach. They just failed because, you know, they'll fill in the blank of their story, as we were saying. They're not strong enough or they're not dedicated enough or they always fail at everything, et cetera. And then it just becomes kind of one more data point. And the story of themselves. So,
I've
it can be frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, I used to go up and down a line and wait and stuff. I don't anymore, but I used to before I got it handled. And you're right. All those same feelings came up. Oh, I'm failure. I can't do it. What's wrong with me? You know, I should be more disciplined. It's, you know, all this stuff goes through your head and body image and, you know, and granted, I mean, you deal with people who have severe cases and illnesses and so on. So I'm not discounting that at all. I'm just saying I can even see it from my perspective, from just, you know, the average person kind of going up and down 20, 30 pounds sometimes in my past that it was a lot of head games going on for me. At least until
that's sort of the story. I mean, to go out there a little bit, not to sound so anti-corporations or something, but I think that's the story that the weight loss industry wants to sell us, is that, you know, if we're failing at their diet, it's obviously something's wrong with us. You know, of course it's not that the premise, or starting from an inaccurate premise or a place that it can't work. You know, 95% of people that diet, you know, quote unquote, fail at them and gain back the weight, if not more. So something's not jiving there.
Yeah, I agree, and that's a whole other like 9-hour discussion.
Oh, for sure.
I'm fascinated, and I love talking about it. But yeah, it's a lot of things together, and so, you know, basically what we're doing today is kind of just scratching the surface of what's possible to talk about and trying to bring up some important points. And I do think that, you know, eventually, you know, the ultimate goal is that, you know, that companies start taking a little more social responsibility. But like we said at the beginning of the call, you know, for those of you who are, you know, interested in that, is that the best way to change the direction of the ship is, you know, with your behavior and your
Absolutely.
It's not saying, oh, you know, these companies are evil and so on, and they should just know, and they should come out with something healthier, and they should not be trying to trick me. Well, you know, it doesn't happen like that.
Right.
It doesn't happen like that. You vote with your behavior and your consumerism, you know.
Right.
Because you're a master consumer, so, you know, start acting like one. Just do it and use that power in a different way. Great stuff.
Absolutely.
Great stuff.
Yeah. Well, what about social media? That's another big topic area. I know social media and kind of body image and eating and so maybe you can talk a little bit about that and kind of what you think about that and kind of where you see that all headed. I mean, because that's a pretty big, people obviously why they're built around social media and Facebook and Twitter and everything else that people are seeing.
Right.
Deluge.
I think the whole sort of evolution of like how social media has impacted people's perceptions of themselves, and then especially my interest. Sorry. Oscar. Fussing a little bit.
Oscar's waking up.
He's waking up. what do you have to say about this, Beth? So, you know, I think it's the impact that it's had on our perceptions of ourselves, and then, you know, our body image in particular is just so interesting to me. But, you know, I think a major kind of part of that is that, you know, everything that we're reading these days, everything that we're witnessing about other people and our interactions with them are so filtered. They're so kind of, you know, quote-unquote staged in a sense. And, you know, people are deciding what kinds of images of themselves, both through, like, their words and pictures and videos, et cetera, to kind of put out there. And then so, you know, the messages that we're receiving about other people are that, you know, they have created this beautiful wreath that they posted to Pinterest, and their kids look perfect on Facebook, and, you know, they're at this really cool place that they talk about on Twitter, et cetera. So, you know,
you mentioned in your blog how people are not going to put their lowlights on social media.
Right.
Only their highlights.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And why would you, for the most part? You know, so you're kind of putting your best foot forward. But sometimes I think in being the recipient of that or the viewer, we kind of forget that. And we just assume everyone has better lives than we do. And everyone looks great in their pictures, and we don't. So, you know, I think that especially for people that already have, you know, a predisposition to, you know, having negative feelings about their body or themselves, you know, it can be kind of a minefield. And, you know, it can feel really overwhelming and bring up some negative feelings. I absolutely don't think, you know, there was a talk for a while, or there was this, like, media flurry for a little while saying, like, social media causes eating disorders or causes negative body image, and I would never say that. You know, but I think that, you know, it can influence some of our thinking, and we have to kind of, again, take a step back and use some of that, those media literacy skills, essentially, and to look at that and to realize that, you know, that's not the whole picture of reality. So.
Yeah, I think the awareness of that is step number one, right? Just being aware of it, being aware of what you just said. If someone were just to accept that and be aware that, hey, you know what, this is the best of the best of everyone's lives, and they're staging some of it and so on. And so I've got to filter that when I'm watching it, even though those images are going through your brain all day long that way. And also I think that you know, when we're always asking ourselves the same question, because we're in the business of inspiring people, there's a fine line. When someone sees of you in Thailand, or you, you know, just finishing your workout, you know, it can go either way, right? There's intimidation or inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what most people who try to help people or are helping people for a living, it's a challenge / opportunity, but that's the thing to crack, is how to keep it inspirational rather than, you know, and there's always going to be people who are going to be intimidated, right? So you can't take, you know, all the responsibility and the weight on your shoulders. But for the most part, as long as you feel like you're doing a good job of doing the best you can do to inspire people, I think that's very important. But again, that's a challenge and opportunity, because, you know, social media is free for the most part, and anyone can go on there, and no one's trained, and they go on there and they just post pictures and they think they're just showing you their life. And hey, you want to see what some people they say, oh, that's really intimidating, and they get, you know, and they think they have to live up to it and you have a better life than I do. And other people are like, wow, that's possible? Awesome, I'm going to do that. Right?
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And that's a great fine line.
Yeah. I mean, I think to, like, what you're saying about, even as, you know, people sort of being in the business of trying to inspire people or help people create healthy change, you know, I think about that all the time. I find, like, when I'm posting an article on Facebook or, you know, writing a blog post, you know, it definitely crosses my mind, like, how are people going to interpret this? And, you know, some people will find it inspiring and helpful, and other people will not. And ultimately, you know, you, as the person kind of putting things out there, you can't kind of take responsibility for everyone. And that's kind of goes back to your point about taking personal responsibility and realizing that, you know, I can do my best to put what I think is going to be helpful and healthy out there, but, you know, everyone has their different backgrounds and predispositions,
right,
and settings, et cetera. So, it's important for everyone individually to kind of look at that. And if they realize that, you know, they're interpreting everything in that way and finding it really, finding that things are having really negative impacts on their body image, for example, then, you know, they might even have to remove themselves for a while, or at least kind of talk about that, figure it out.
Yeah, it was really important what you said at the very beginning of this, which was, you know, be aware that people are putting their highlights on there, not their lowlights. Just be aware of that.
Right.
If you're aware of that, you know, even though you may, and look, if it's bothering you a lot, then you know what? You may have to hide that person's feed or for a little while so you can come back and revisit it when you're a little bit stronger.
Yeah, you can do that.
Right? Or stay off of it. If you don't want to see it, then don't see it.
Right.
Jason, are you going to say something?
Yeah, but
Jason,
you're
on social media all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny. It's so ironic how we tell people don't post everything you're doing on Facebook. And I have some friends that post, like, literally everything they're doing. And we're like, oh, geez, just tell me the important things, right?
That's what
everyone said, because so many people don't. And so we actually solidify the message to people, only put good things on. So, and it's funny because so many people I have this conversation with, and it's always the same conversation around social media when people get annoyed with it, for the most part, is, oh, gee, that person's posting, like, you know, and especially the new now from people that really get annoyed are people that are posting pictures when they're pregnant, right? And things of like of things of showing their fetus and its progress, and people just getting, oh, why do they have to keep posting all these things all the time? And it's interesting now to bring this up and people realizing that they're solidifying their own problem or own potential issues in a way by having people posting all these positive things, but they're the one telling them to do it.
Right.
That realization that is actually happening. So I find it very ironic and fascinating. The current whole topic around social media.
That's a really interesting point. I hadn't really thought about that, but yeah, absolutely. You know, we get annoyed if people are putting every mundane detail, but then we forget that, you know, their lives are most, for the most part, pretty mundane, except for the highlights.
Yes.
So that's interesting.
Yeah. There's that search for relevance. There's so much going on there. I got to be relevant, you know, got to be relevant. Everyone else is relevant.
Yeah.
I got to post so even if it's not interesting, I got to post it, you know. And then we're, of course, saying, you know, yeah, we need more positivity in the world. And they're like, oh, okay, great. Then I'll just brag about everything I do. Right? So it's really fascinating. So when I'm saying right or wrong, I'm just saying it's fascinating to think about it and to discuss it.
Right.
Because I don't think anyone really knows
what
the answer is either.
Yeah, I think it goes back to what we were saying before, just about, I think, you know, it's the answer, if there is one, is just, you know, being aware of what's going on and how people are using social media and what the intention is and its effect on you yourself. So, you know, it's not necessarily about changing anything, actually.
Another question I'd like to ask you on is women and sort of eating issues and kind of what are the – has there been any evolution or changes, you know, over the last decade in time, and kind of what are the top things you're kind of seeing around that?
You know, one big thing we see more of now, I'd say as a change, is this idea of orthorexia is often what people are calling it. That's not an official term or diagnosis, but basically it just means an kind of obsessive focus on eating healthfully. So it's not necessarily that people are, you know, starving themselves, quote unquote, but they might have sort of an unhealthy fixation on like eating a certain way, like, you know, eating all raw food or all gluten-free if they don't necessarily, you know, have medical reasons to do so. So we're seeing kind of more of that. And it's kind of interesting because there's some...
I think I might have that. I know what you mean. I'm not making light of everyone. I'm just saying that, you know, it's easy to do that. It's easy to get into something.
Right.
Hey, I'm eating gluten-free because I have this allergy, or I think I do, or I might, or, you know what, I used to eat all crap, so now I'm only going to eat healthy. And it's very easy to quickly become obsessed. That's
right.
What you're talking
about. And that's the key there, is not, you know, there's nothing inherently wrong with, like, eating certain ways. It's about... if it becomes like obsessive and if it starts to impact like your ability to, you know, socialize or carry on a conversation or, you know, if it's impacting your daily life, you know, if people feel like, you know, I care a lot about the, you know, where my food is coming from. And, you know, I think that that's great. So, I mean, that's sort of, I think the positive of where it started is that we are paying more attention to, like sourcing our food and health and nutrition and that kind of thing. But for some people, you know, it becomes obsessive.
Yeah. I can only say from my own personal life and personal experience that I try to have a balance of that because I do eat really well. But but I'm constantly aware of not being obsessive and having a normal life. And so I make the best choices I can in the situations I'm in, and that's how I make peace with it. And so I don't really worry, because I could be totally obsessive about it. But I do my best to say, you know what, hey, that's what they've got, and if I want to eat that, you know, I'm just going to make the best choice I can, and it's not going to kill me. But this one thing isn't going to, you know, reverse everything I've done, so I'm sure that it's fine. And that helps me deal with it at least and not feel depressed afterwards or feel like, oh, man, I was doing so well, and now I just fell off the wagon, you know, which is a huge thing for people.
Right. Yeah, when you get into that trap of feeling like because I haven't done X, then, you know, I failed in some way, you know, that's when there starts to be a problem. You know, I think it's all about, like you're saying, flexibility you know,
consistency
if you're
too.
Doing what you can, but if things come up, if the situation, you know, challenges you in a certain way, your behavior might have to be different, and that has to be okay. So we're definitely seeing more of that. Yeah.
Seeing a lot of that. Okay. And you call it unofficially ortholexia?
Orthorexia.
Orthorexia.
So
okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's sort of not a totally made up term. It's kind of becoming more popular, but it's not, you know, an official term yet. But yeah. So we see some of that, just, you know, kind of disordered patterns of eating that go along with that. You know, I think what else are we seeing? We're seeing, you know, interesting to me, we're seeing people who have been diagnosed with like type 1 or type 2 diabetes, like abusing their insulin as a means of manipulating their weight.
Really?
So, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, as we've seen diabetes kind of rising, we end up seeing kind of more of that too. So people can kind of, especially younger people found that have type 1 diabetes, will sometimes manipulate their insulin levels and administering it to themselves as a means of trying to lose weight and manipulate their weight, which is, of course, very, very dangerous.
Yeah, that's scary territory. If you're doing that, stop doing
scary.
It out there. That's really bad.
Definitely.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, I think a lot of the, you know, you mentioned pregnancy earlier and, you know, having just been pregnant, I've kind of walked down that road and seen a lot more than I even knew about before. But there's, you know, I think that there's a really, there's some unhealthy obsessiveness around that can emerge, like, during pregnancy for a lot of people, a lot of women. You know, and I think some of that does stem from this kind of like cultural focus on, you know, what a woman should look like during pregnancy and then particular after pregnancy. You know, we see these images of celebrities that, you know, are in their quote unquote pre-baby body, you know, 6 weeks later. And then women find that it doesn't exactly work that way and they don't understand why, and get frustrated and then can end up resorting to some unhealthy habits. Or women that during pregnancy feel really uncomfortable, like they're not used to, you know, their body changing. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's just sort of what happens, but it can feel really uncomfortable. And so people can end up having some particular difficulties during that kind of life transition.
Yeah, good to be aware that, you know, a lot of celebrities have personal trainers that they pay $1,000 a month that you may not have.
Right.
Not that
right.
I'm not a big one for excuses, but there are things
right.
going on behind the scenes that make it falsely appear that overnight,
right.
you know, that you should be perfect, and if you're not, then somehow you are less, right?
Right.
You should feel bad
right.
about yourself, which is is far from, you know, the truth, obviously. I mean, you know,
right.
I would never say that. So that's another thing. Tell me about this. So that's another huge thing. You're right about that. I see, and we see it in the news all the time. We see it on all the celebrity shows about how people are being held to, like, these unreal expectations and so on. And what about this thing, this resurgence of this, I want to say, space between the thighs thing? You want to explain that to me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, we've seen – it's interesting. I think a few months ago, started hearing from more, you know, patients that I work with and just, you know, kind of on the street, so to speak, about this focus on for women, for especially like younger women, trying to kind of generate as much space between their thighs as possible by, you know, losing as much weight as possible, that, you know, even kind of measuring it. So, you know, already kind of looking at, you know, what's your waist circumference, et cetera, as measures of, you know, body success. But now kind of using this as another measure of how well someone's doing or how attractive they are, which is pretty interesting, I think. You know, you have to be usually pretty underweight to kind of have that. So it's kind of a slippery slope, I think, if women and girls are aspiring to that.
Yeah, and especially since, you know, there's not just one body type. There are different body types, so you may not be built that way. So
right.
We're trying to go for that.
Exactly.
Achieve it. As admirable as it may be, or you think it is, it can sometimes just be something that is, you know,
right.
Your body is just not built that way. Wow,
right.
Okay, so those are
yeah.
some things that are coming up, huh?
Yeah.
I'll get a question for you, actually.
Sure.
Yeah, what are some practical tips that people can take away that may be struggling, you know, with eating issues or body image? Mm-hmm. I mean, what are things you could, you know, kind of give them that they could
mm-hmm.
do for read or go to or think about? I mean, I think any of those things would probably be helpful for people out there just
sure.
being challenged.
And I guess the first thing I would say is just in terms of figuring out if your maybe eating habits or, you know, the way that you feel about your body might be able to use some work or might not be, you know, as ideal as you would like it. I think that's an important place to start because I think it's unfortunately, of course, sort of culturally expected that we're going to not necessarily always feel perfect about our bodies, and our eating is not always going to be perfect. But trying to figure out, like, at what point is it bleeding into an area of needing maybe some help is important. And I think that ways that people can do that is to look at, like, you know, how much time is you know, their obsession or I shouldn't say obsession necessarily. How much time is their interest, for instance, taking in their lives? Does it feel obsessive, the way that they're thinking about their body or about food? Is it impairing kind of their relationships or having an impact on their relationships in any way? You know, and I think that if it is, then, you know, it's important to, you know, talk to someone, whether, you know, that's someone in their personal life or a professional, even if it's just their primary care doctor, to start there. Just to let them know that this might be an issue for them. You know, I think that people can, what I say is one of the best ways to avoid getting into difficulties with body and eating is actually to avoid dieting at all costs. You know, I think that dieting, you know, restricting eating leads to some pretty vicious cycles for a lot of people. And doesn't tend to work. So I think the focus should be on changing their life in a healthy way rather than having kind of weight loss as a specific goal. So thinking about, like, how do I change my behaviors to be more in line with a healthy lifestyle? And then kind of your weight will follow where it will. So I think those are a couple things. And then, of course, just, you know, my big plug for media literacy and just trying to really think critically about the things that you're seeing and what impact it's having on you and how you want to interpret that and incorporate it into the way that you're seeing the world. So
great.
I think that those are a few things.
Awesome. Brent, do you have anything else that you want to ask?
I think we've covered so much today and it's been awesome.
Yeah,
it's been just fantastic. Just all the stuff. Ashley, thanks so much for being here. We hope all of you out there have learned something, had some insights and aha moments during this audio. And if you have, then as usual, take action on those immediately. The sooner you take action, the sooner your life has a possibility of changing. Ashley, how do you want people to go find out more about you? Where can they find out what you're up to?
Yeah, well, and thank you so much for inviting me to be here today. It's really exciting for me to get to talk about some of this fun stuff. So, if people are interested in kind of learning more or connecting with me, which I would love, you can visit my blog. Website is www.nourishing-the-soul.com. So it does have those two hyphens in it. You know, also Nourishing the Souls on Facebook and Twitter and all that kind of fun stuff. So I'd be happy to kind of talk more with anyone.
And you're working with clients?
Yeah, and I work at a treatment center in Chicago called Insight Behavioral Health Center. So, you know, if anybody feels like they might need to talk to a professional about any of these issues, I would be happy to talk with you further.
Great. And do you have anything else, any new projects you're working on or any new, you know, things you're going to embark on coming up?
You know, I've been focused on, you know, having a little baby and doing that for right now. So I'm looking forward next week. I'm, you know, going back to work and we'll probably be starting some new things. So but for right now, that's about it.
Well, is it Oscar?
Oscar, yes.
Oscar is a new endeavor and a very important one. So,
Thank you.
Well, listen, again, it was great having you here. Jason, thanks for being here as usual.
Thanks.
So I hope you all enjoyed this audio. And if you know someone who could benefit from listening to this, I encourage you to share it with them. And if you want to know what I'm up to, you can go to BrentSmithLifestyle.com. Ashley, thanks again for being here, and we will talk to you all later.
Thank you.